Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Wayne Fetterman is on to talk all things comedy, and we'll get you caught up on Will Rogers and Mark Twain and all the greats. Interesting story, interesting history stuff. And Dawson coming in, doing the news and kicking ass, taking names.
Adam Carolla's I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, navigating our all-woke, no-joke culture, has over 1,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Here's one.
I feel great in the song loud. I know that I know alone, and this is good about the hypersensitive world as you are.
Well said. Pick up I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, navigating our all-woke, no-joke culture, and leave your five-star review on Amazon. Get all the links at adamcarolla.com.
Wayne Fetterman has joined us. He's been in movies such as Knocked Up, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Step Brothers, Funny People, Legally Blonde, and TV shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm, my favorite, Crashing, second favorite, Larry Sanders Show, oh, that's in there, Silicon Valley, Community. All the good stuff as well. And has got a book out, The History of Stand-Up from Mark Twain to Dave Chappelle, available now on Amazon. And it chronicles the evolution of stand-up pre-vaudeville days to today. Good to see you, Wayne.
Hey, man. Nice to see you, Ad.
Yeah, let's talk about stand-up. Well, here's a question for a guy who teaches stand-up and studies stand-up. I always kind of liken things to the heavyweight boxing division. You know, you had the Foreman and Ali days, or Joe Frazier and all these great days. And then you had these weird days with guys like Ronaldo Snipes and Michael Spinks and, you know, some names that weren't really legendary names. So it was kind of a low time for heavyweight boxers. And then it kind of went up again with the Klitschkos and Lennox Lewis. Where are we with stand-up? How would you, if you charted, think about the 80s and the 90s?
I know.
And some of those names.
The problem with that question, I'm already attacking the question, is that in boxing, there's a clear winner. Like somebody wins either on points or they knock the other person out. Whereas stand-up, it's completely subjective on who is funny, who isn't funny. And what I say in the book, unfortunately, is that stand-up does not age well. It's very much a generational thing. So it's even hard to compare. Like, I mean, there's a few that sort of transcend. Obviously, Richard Pryor and Carlin are a couple examples of that. But it's just hard. It's hard to even compare era to era. And even who was the best of that era. So I try not to get into that.
I think we can agree that
that when, means that you want me to agree with
but you talk to some of these guys and they'll go like, I don't know, talk to Byron Allen or somebody and they'll go like, when I was at the Comedy Store, when I got there was Jay Leno and David Letterman and Seinfeld or whomever, you know, that's like a who's who of sort of royalty of comedy. And, you know, now it's, I don't know how history's going to view it, but it doesn't feel as household, you know, it's got me and Mark Mariner back there, you know, and it's like, who cares?
I don't know. Look, who knows? You might be right. You might be right. But I do feel a lot of it is like the first time you see these stand-ups when you're a younger person, it is sort of like this huge kind of, it's almost like a magic trick they're doing. You're just like amazed by the whole thing. And then when you're around it for a few years, it's harder to impress you with that, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Thank you.
Let's talk about teaching. Let's talk about teaching stand-up.
Oh, yeah, the worst.
I think I took a stand-up class. I rarely ever talk about it. When I was like 19, I was like some professor at UCLA had some sort of thing at night or something, and I only
UCLA Extension, perhaps.
Yeah, oh yeah, I wasn't able to go. We're
on
to
campus.
UCLA.
We're allowed on campus.
It was on campus though, but it was an extension thing.
Yep.
And this guy was teaching stand-up. I don't know what you can teach a 19-year-old about stand-up.
Okay, can I?
Go.
This is something I've said before, that you can't teach someone to be funny, obviously. That's a given, right?
Yes.
So But out of that class, at least did you go like, oh, I'm like the funniest guy in this class, at least. Did you get any kind of like, oh, at least I'm on the track somewhere. This is a safe environment where I can kind of just, as opposed to just throw myself into an open mic. Did that happen?
Later on, when I was with the Groundlings, when I was taking Groundlings classes, I was like, oh, I am subjectively funnier than most of these people. I have no idea what I'm doing, but right. I think I'm funnier than a lot of these people.
Right. And you can get a sense of that. You can get a sense of someone who just cannot. And I have, believe me, I teach them a lot. They just have no, they're not even close. They're not even close to the pool.
Well,
it's like a huge pool and they're like walking in the other direction. They can't even see it.
Is this a safe statement then? There's people that teach like self-defense classes, you know, and they're not going to turn the spindly middle-aged woman into a cage fighter, but she'll be better if someone attacks her on the street than before she took the class. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. She'll have like a couple like counter moves or skills or confidence to grab the guy's balls or whatever.
Right.
I'm assuming she's being attacked by a guy. I don't know if that's wrong.
So, but, yeah. So what is...
don't be gender presumptive.
I'm the worst.
So let's say you get...
Presumptive.
Well, you got Dawson over here, Engineer Dawson. Dawson's going to be doing some stand-up with me, and that's going to be Jam in the Van Speakeasy March 25th. I'll give a plug out there. And
I love it.
He's going to be opening, doing a few minutes for me. What are some... You know, he's done a little bit. He's pretty good on his feet. He's got some mic time, but not a lot of stand-up time. What are some tips for like a young comedian who's got to get his first 5 minutes together?
Well, this is what I always say. I said there's nothing I can teach you that's better than stage time, right? There's no Fetterman magic trick where all of a sudden like, oh my God, I'm writing John Mulaney jokes. This is incredible.
Right.
So I tell them that's the first thing. That the most important thing is to get on stage as much as possible. And then I just teach them like just basic writing things. Like three of the things that I go over and over and over again is just clarity, brevity, and specificity. Like those are three things they can kind of wrap their heads around when they're writing a bit. They're like, is this as brief and as clear, as specific as possible? And I think for the most part, there's exceptions. For the most great stand-up falls into that. There's not a lot of loose language around it. You've been doing it, so it's just like that. That's kind of, yeah. It's only $58,000 a year to go there, so it's well worth those three tips.
What Wayne's alluding to, I assume, Wayne, correct me if I'm wrong, you teach at USC.
Yeah.
I went to USC. I would have loved the class like yours 20 years ago when I was there. I want to know first, did you pitch the class to them or did they come to you? And also, how do you grade? What is the determining factor in the grade?
Well, here's all great questions. First of all, can I ask you, why would you take that class as a student?
It sounds fun. It sounds like if I'm just doing an elective, I assume it's an elective. I can't imagine it. Is it part of a core curriculum?
It can be. There is like a comedy like a minor. Element? There is a comedy minor that it could be part of that.
Okay. Well, as an elective, it sounds like a lot of fun. And yeah. I took a improv class back at USC. It was like improv and theater games taught by like a professional clown, like a guy who did clowning. And so it was a lot more movement than it was improv as we know it, but it was still fun.
Were there hats involved?
There were no hats. There was a lot of movement, a lot of gesticulating. But anyway, feel free to answer the questions.
Okay. My answer to your question is, how do I grade them?
Yeah. How does one get an A in a comedy class?
Okay. You just show up to the class and participate. Okay. Here's the insane part of it. Unlike writing, where there is some subjectivity to it, I was told right off the bat, like, you cannot judge on talent. You cannot grade on talent.
Really?
Yeah.
You have to grade on effort and participate by being there. Obviously.
Yeah. Yes. Let that sink in, people. Let it sink in.
I'm trying to think of how much of a great stand-up or just a stand-up we like is a certain je ne sais quoi, a certain just we like this person. They seem comfortable in their own skin.
Maybe Nate Bargatze. Do you know him?
He's coming on in a few days.
He is. Oh, I think he's incredible.
He's coming on tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good plug for the show. So
that's a strange coincidence.
Nate Bargatze.
I didn't know what your schedule was.
Yeah, he has a kind of a comfort. You know, I think Dave Chappelle has a comfort. I mean, all the great guys sort of have a comfort.
Quiet confidence to it, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, unless you're going to go kind of a Gilbert Godfrey.
Like a Richard kind of Lewis kind of thing.
Own thing. Yeah. But I mean, you know, so much of it seems to just be about a kind of a humanistic quality, almost like I'll make this statement. You tell me if you agree.
Okay.
I think if you seem uncomfortable, you're going to have a real hard time landing great jokes. If you seem uncomfortable, conversely, if you seem very comfortable, lesser jokes will land.
Absolutely. I tell them the whole, and that's what goes back to what I said earlier, is that you can only kind of get that comfortableness with stage time, in my opinion. Like very few, there's a few, Eddie Murphy, there's a few that like out of the gate have this next level quiet confidence about them. But usually it's something you're like, oh, this is the rhythm of, this is my thing. But to tell you the truth, honestly, I do feel like what you said is right on, spot on, that the humanity behind the comic is just as important as the specific jokes.
Yeah. And also, I think what ends up happening is at the beginning part of your career, even before it's a career, just you get up on stage, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of like a first date. Like all the things that you shouldn't do, you're compelled to do on the first date, but they're all the wrong things to do. Like you get a little nervous, so you start talking too much, and then you start talking about yourself too much, and then you start trying to build yourself up. It's always the best is sit back, ask her questions, let her talk about herself. Like you even take something, like dry mouth or sweating. Like all the things you don't want to do on stage, get a dry mouth, sweat, your forehead starts beating up. It's all what happens when you get pushed into this situation. And I think a lot of people, when they're beginning, feel pressured. And when they feel that pressure, they speed it up. Like they start talking faster. And then if you're not getting laughs, you'll speed it up even more, trying to like push out more jokes, thinking, you know, you're going to make up for it. The reality is when you really slow it down, the audience will just stay with you. They're actually get more engaged when you slow it down.
Yeah. Brian, I don't know if do you stand up as well?
I had a very brief and specific stand-up career in 2019. Oh. I've never done stand-up, but I was hosting a big benefit for young adult cancer. And so over the course of about a year, I took a stand-up class. I learned stand-up. I did open mics. I hosted a couple of small things. And I performed a 12-ish minute set that I had worked on for about a year. So I guess I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for.
No. I was just curious about it because – I don't know if you or Adam have had that exactly what you're describing, where things aren't going well. And then you race to these punchlines thinking, God, if I can just get to this punchline, get this laugh, I can get this thing back on track. And they just can smell it. I feel like audiences are just like they're uncomfortable for your uncomfortableness. Mm-hmm. And it just unravels in the worst possible way. That's been my experience.
Yeah.
It's like tripping in a race. It's like it's hard to recover.
Yeah.
It's
easier when you're racing, but I've gone full Zola Bud. Oh, there was a deep trip race reference. Got to be specific.
That's good.
You learned one of the three, the Fetterman three.
The Fetterman three was Zola Bud. Call the raccoon gal and see if she's heard of Zola Bud, Brian. It's a real deep cut, Wayne. So in the book, let's get to the book. Sorry.
No. I like talking about how ridiculous it is. But I will say that a lot of times I bring in comics to the class to speak to them. And they're like, oh, yeah, I took a comedy class. I took a stand-up class when I started. Like Margaret Cho did that. Jeff Ross did that. You know, it was like, I was really surprised how many people were just like, okay, this is a great, great way to get into, like, into the pool, as I call it.
Well, you know, as I think about it, yeah. I do love automobile racing, and everyone who races cars, many of them started off in like a high performance driving school or something. They went right to school for it. You know, you think of it as, oh, your dad ran moonshine and he handed you the keys to the Mercury or something. But a lot of people went sort of traditional routes. And, right, you know, why isn't, you know, comedy's a lot of soul and sort of invisible stuff and pixie dust and stuff, but it's also a lot of technique. And I learned from doing improvisational humor that there are rules for improvisational humor. When you go to the Groundlings, they teach you the rules. Many radio people and other people I've had to deal with over the years could have benefited greatly from, you know, yes and not only that, but God knows, yeah, Bonaducci could have learned from Cynthia Segetti way back in the day. But
again, the Fetterman 3. I love that you're using all of my techniques.
There's a I call it the Segetti 4, but okay.
Oh, really?
No, but there is a base. I mean, you can go off and vamp and be funny and do all the characters you want, but it is good to get that base underneath you first. Yes.
Not only that, but what you were alluding to, there are plenty. In fact, people listening to the show, the majority of probably improvisational comedians you know and listen to still take classes after they've become sort of known entities. Actors still take acting classes after they become working actors. Like, just, it's like a workout. You know what I mean? It's just a place to go and hit the comedic heavy bag.
Well, it's, yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm kind of trying to justify this job I have at USC, but it's I think there is some value.
Oh yeah,
I just don't know if it's $58,000.
I would have loved to have taken that class.
Well, the book anyway, the history of stand-up. It says from Mark Twain. Now most people think of him as like a humorist, I guess. Do you think of him as a stand-up?
Well, I define stand-up as somebody standing alone on stage getting laughs without, like, music or, you know, without a partner, without a ventriloquist dummy.
And what kind of venues would Mark Twain do? How would he do that?
Well, this is the thing. I even go back there's a guy that he saw do what they were called comedy lectures at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a guy he saw that inspired him to do this tour. And it was mainly theaters. It was mainly theaters and like banquet halls, and it was all over the world. It was Hungary. It was Austria. It was England. It was France. It was incredible what he was able to do before there was ever any air travel or anything. And he made a ton of money. That's why he did it, to tell you the truth, because he had been famous from these books, and then he lost a bunch of money in a startup, and then he was broke. And it was like, oh, I can do what Artemis Ward, who I was talking about, I can do what that is and charge $1 a person. And that's how he got rich again.
Wow.
And did he, like, would he do, he would do stories, anecdotes, like, it wouldn't be like a tight set. Like
it would not be like a tight set. But the guy he watched, here was his technique. This is Artemis Ward, the guy that Mark Twain saw and was like, oh, this is how I can do it. There was something called the Lyceum movement, which was like adult education in theaters. Like, people would pontificate on botany or American Revolution or
the TED talks of their day.
Yes, exactly. Right. It was like an hour TED talk, and people would pay to go see this because there wasn't, you know, big public education at the time. So this guy, Artemis.
Sorry, Wayne, what year would this be? Like, where
this is around the mid-1800s, a little bit before the Civil War. Like, there's sort of a growing middle class in the United States. And so so there's this Lyceum movement, huge movement. So this guy, Artemis Ward, has already got a reputation of being a funny dude for these funny newspaper articles that he wrote. And so he was like, oh, maybe I can put this on stage. So he had his thing was called Stories of the baby or something like that. And then he went on stage, but the whole time, the hour and 20 minutes, that's what he did, never mentioned stories of the baby. Like his whole thing was like, I'm going to get to it. Here's a tangent. And he did it in a very deadpan style. Like, I don't know what you people are laughing at. I'm going to get to this. So that was his technique. Twain sees him and is like, and writes about him. He's like, this guy Artemis is a genius. And that's how it kind of, that was one of the, what I call the forefathers of stand-up. So those two guys, definitely.
And no amplified sound then.
Nope.
Just acoustics, right?
Right.
And then Twain, would he do, transcripts of his stuff? Or
I don't know if we have transcripts. We don't have any audio recording of him.
Right.
None of Artemis, none of Twain. And there's only very little footage of Twain. So, the reaction he got everywhere he went, all over the country. I have it in the book, like his tour dates in December 1869. Like what he did in December that month, like all the theaters he played. And it was almost like a lot of times it was every night, then we'd take a day off. It was just like a comic store.
It's kind of weird as I think about it.
Yeah.
That we had photographs and movies 75 years before we had audio recording, right?
No.
That
would be weird.
But it would be weird. But
I mean, an audio track to like motion picture, that took a while.
You're talking about synchronized sound to a movie?
Yeah, I mean, just like, like
they shellacked records, you know, in the 1800s.
But we had video of Mark Twain, but we didn't have any audio.
Correct.
Of him. I mean, it wasn't readily available. You could go to one of his events and like film it, but you couldn't record it. Or how come there's no audio then of Mark Twain?
The footage of Twain is like from the early 1900s, and it's just him in his house. And I think at the time he was like very worried about people exploiting him. So there was, I think he was very careful about not doing any record. He could have. There was recordings, but no live recordings. But there were comedians at the time in the late 1800s. There's a famous guy named Uncle Josh who did, Uncle Josh.
We all have an Uncle Josh. Yeah.
And he had a bunch of records that he sold, and they were just, but he did it in a studio, and he would just do his, like, would refer to them as humorists, like humorous stories about New England kind of thing.
So Twain would get up there, and would he do an hour and 20 minutes?
Yep.
And
like it was, people went all over the world, like went nuts for this guy. And he was, once in a while, he got to the point where he was like, in the middle of the show, he might do something sad, like Hannah Gadsby style. and then go back to it, you know, because he wanted to prove that he had like a little bit of a range. Mm-hmm. So he would do some melancholy stuff. Sometimes he'd read from the book and then he'd tell a little story, and people went nuts for Twain. You should check out, there's a good documentary on him.
What's
the guy
called
that does all the documentaries?
Ken Burns?
Yes, Ken Burns. Thank you. Ken Burns has a really good about those tours and how incredible they were. But again, no one was calling it stand-up. I don't want to make it seem like, he's doing stand-up.
Right.
And he's doing an open mic, and now he's doing this thing. It was a whole different, but he was, that's what he was doing.
When was stand-up codified as we know it? When did it sort of become
1947, the term stand-up came to be.
Is that Catskills, or is that somewhere else?
It was more, it was partly of the Catskills, but it was more, I mean, there's a number of ideas of where it came from, but I think our overarching one, it was a shorthand for bookers to book a certain kind of act that didn't need music cues, didn't need lighting cues, just needed a microphone. They could throw him out there and he would just do jokes, stand up. That's it. Like even Bob Hope could I'll do a duet with this girl and I'll do a comedy bit with Jerry Colonna and then I'll do 10 minutes of stand up. Like it was a specific kind of thing you could do.
God, it is fascinating. I don't know why I'm going down the Mark Twain rabbit hole.
No,
here,
let's keep going there. I love it.
When did he die? How old did he? I just picture sort of old Mark Twain.
Yeah. Early 1900s. I don't know the exact date. Is this
1910? 1910, okay. Says Chris. Where does Will Rogers kind of work into this?
Well, in the book, I have four forefathers. They are Artemus Ward, that guy you just heard about. Mm-hmm. He's the one that inspires Twain, who's become so much more famous than Artemus Ward.
Ward is still at the Comedy Store. I've gone.
No, I think you.
Who am I thinking of? Angus.
You're thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. Well, he's still at it. That's.
Yeah.
That's my point.
And then there was a guy named Burt Williams who came out of the minstrel show. He's an African American dude. And then Will Rogers is the fourth. So Will Rogers is huge, because he was the first one to do straight on political, topical material. It was a lot more gentle than it is now, where you kind of eviscerate the person.
Mm-hmm.
But so anyone that does politics on stage, so that's Carson, that's Bob Hope, that's Mort Saul, that's any of the SNL, Weekend Update dudes.
Bill Maher
couldn't be, but John, you know. So, yeah, all of those guys.
You know what's weird about Will Rogers is.
Tell me.
I was literally driving through.
Tell the guy who wrote the book.
I will tell you, because this has more to do with real estate. But I was driving through the canyon yesterday, and I saw Will Rogers State Park up in Santa Monica, Will Rogers Beach down there. And I thought, what's his connection to Santa Monica? Like, he must have been a SoCal guy. I don't know why they named a stretch of beach. You know,
He owned all of that land.
Yeah, because head into Malibu, if you were driving from Santa Monica down PCH into Malibu, you would cross Will Rogers State Beach. And there's a Will Rogers. When I was, 22, I had a motorcycle and I went on a date. I remember going up to, you go down Sunset before it spills out into PCH, and you turn up the driveway and it's a Will Rogers State Park up there. So he had all that land.
Yeah. And he donated it when he was extremely successful. And now it's people kind of know about him, but his story is phenomenal. He was Cherokee. He was half Cherokee.
Really?
And born in what became Oklahoma, then known as Indian Territory, learned how to rope as a kid, and that's how he got into show business as something. Remember, we were talking about the Lyceum circuit, like the Lyceum thing that Twain and Artemus did? He got in something that was called Wild West shows, which were traveling shows. They're like a circus, and they would, like, you know, rope, and then the cowboy boots, Indian reenactments, and Bronco things, and shooting. And I'm sure you heard of Annie Oakley. She was part of that whole thing. Yeah. So that's how he got started before he ever talked on stage.
Wayne Fetterman, Leo Carrillo State Beach. How funny was Leo Carrillo? <'Cause laughs> the next beach you hit is Leo Carrillo.
That's hilarious.
I
tell you, Zuma was incredible. He was a mime. Zuma was a mime.
Yeah, it goes Will Rogers, Malibu, whatever, Leo Carrillo, and whatever. So, God, he must have bought that, some of the most expensive real estate on the planet. He must have bought that for pennies an acre. I mean, were we talking about the 20s?
I think he bought that land in the 20s because he was a big movie star. He was a big radio star. The most important thing was he had this newspaper column that he wrote every day with like stuff. So he was that, had books, tours, toured the world. He was like a machine.
We would have Me Too'd the shit out of these guys if they were alive today.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Will Rogers and Leo Carrillo. Mark Twain, they'd be running for their fucking lives. Their publicists would be delivering prepared statements. They'd be in semi-seclusion. They'd probably all have to move to France at this point. When did Will Rogers pass? Do you remember?
Well, Will Rogers.
1935.
No, he died in a horrific plane crash.
That's right.
in Alaska with this other guy, Wiley Post, who was this sort of crazy, you know, aviator who created the spacesuit. So anyway, he dies, and it is all the flags, federal property, half mast.
Wow.
All the day of his funeral, NBC, CBS, radio, no television yet, obviously, stops broadcasting for like 10 minutes. They stop all the movies, stop for 2 minutes, 1,200 movie theaters across the country. It's devastating. I can't believe it would be like, I don't even know if there's
Beyonce.
Any-
Well, a national treasure.
Yes, it was a national treasure. It was a big thing when he died. So, and the horrificness of it, just like, because that's when like people were just thinking, is this air travel? Is this going to be a thing? Are we like, you know? Right.
Yeah, probably.
So it was horrific.
Howard Hughes was pissed.
And can I also say something that's very interesting about Will Rogers to me? Oh. Probably not to you, but he was the first comedian to host the Academy Awards.
Oh, how about that? That's some fun trivia.
Wow. And how long did how long had the Academy Awards been going?
They started in 29. He did it in 33. So he did maybe the fourth one.
Wow. That's interesting.
Downtown Los Angeles. And then
is he available this year?
Well, now they can't get anyone speaking because they had because you have to have a Twitter account and the so yeah. But that started the tradition of Bob Hope and all of those guys right up through Billy Crystal and Ellen DeGeneres.
How old was Will when he died? Do you remember?
You're 55.
So I'm going to guess 55. That's off the top of my head.
Adam, you want to log a guess?
Yeah, I don't want to log in.
Probably older than 50, younger than 60. I don't know. I'll just.
What's the difference?
I'm an odd numbers man, so I'll just. I'll go right in the middle. I'll go 55.
The double nickel.
All right. Well, all very interesting stuff. Wayne, you want to hang out and do news with us?
I'd love to.
All right, Wayne Fetterman's going to hang with us. Dawson's going to fill in with Gina, and we'll do the news right after this.
In the spirit of Murrow, Jennings, Cronkite, here's another great moment in local news.
Some people in the Creighton area of Mobile say a leprechaun is taking up residence in their neighborhood. A leprechaun. NBC 15's Brian Johnson has more.
Curiosity leads to large crowds in Mobile's Creighton community, many of you bringing binoculars, camcorders, even camera phones to take pictures.
To me, it looked like a leprechaun to me. I got to look up in the tree. Who else in the leprechaun say yeah? Yeah!
Yeah! Eyewitnesses say the leprechaun only comes out at night. If you shine a light in its direction, it suddenly disappears.
That's a great moment in local news. Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, Dawson's going to be filling in for Gina Grad, and Wayne Fetterman's hanging in, and so is Bald. So take it away, Dawson.
Mike Dawson with the news.
Nice.
Wow.
So let's begin here. Broadcasters, mainly in the Los Angeles area, but really nationwide, are mourning the loss of legendary sportscaster Steve Grad, who passed away on March 16th. Fellow broadcaster Jack Salvatore, who worked with Mr. Grad for many years, said, "Hell of a ride through the roller coaster of life with the sweetest, kindest, most compassionate, loyal, friendliest, and most dedicated to family, most professional, smartest, strongest, most adventurous, funniest, and downright good person I've ever known. I'm blessed that you put up with me for all these years."
Wayne Fetterman, that's Gina Grad's father, who just passed away suddenly.
Is that why she's not here?
Yes, famous sportscaster.
Steve Grad worked on KNX 1070, doing the sports reports from 93 to 2016. He was also on KTLA. Also worked at K101 in San Francisco for a period of the 80s. And then Kansas City, San Antonio, and Portland. And he will be missed in the radio community. All right. The final day for collecting signatures to recall Governor, California Governor Gavin Newsom is today as we record this. It is over the recall. People say that they have enough signatures for the recall to go through, but there are still several hurdles. First, signatures need to be verified. There's also a thing where they allow people 30 days to withdraw their signature. So the recall people do expect that a Democratic campaign is going to come out in the next few days urging Democrats to remove their signatures of those 2 million. Still quite a few hoops to go through. They say the earliest recall election could happen would be in October, possibly November, but it's going to be all at the whim of the bureaucratic process.
Max Zapata, do we have his commercial somewhere? Yeah, he was now... Newsom's having to sort of get up and burn some calories now. Now he's fighting for his job. This whole notion that, what if we get somebody worse than Newsom? Well, who's worse than Newsom? Number one. Number two.
Watch your tongue.
We could get the plastic owl that's on top of the seafood restaurants to keep the seagulls from shitting on the sign, and that would be a step toward the light in terms of replacing Gavin Newsom. But Newsom, we'll play the commercial. We have the one of, does he have the QAnon one in there?
Yeah, so this is a whole new campaign he launched on awesome. Monday. So we'll take a look.
Oh, God, QAnon, everybody.
Who's behind the partisan recall of Governor Gavin Newsom?
Same
anti-vaccine
people.
QAnon extremists. Violent white supremacists like the Proud Boys who attacked our nation's capital on January 6th. And the same right-wing Republican politicians who supported Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the election. Of course, paid for by the Republican National Committee. Instead of helping fight the pandemic, national Republicans are coming to fight Californians. Add your name to help stop the Republican recall. It's all a power right. grab.
Yeah. Well, it's a power grab, like taking a retarded 9-year-old out of the driver's seat of a pickup truck is a power grab. Yes. Right. That would be a power grab. That's true. Hey, Timmy. No, no. No, no. Give me the keys. You're going to hurt somebody. Yes, that's a power grab, like taking a pistol away from a severely disabled 3-year-old. That would be, if that's the power grab we're talking about, then so be it. I love the fact that we get to blame QAnon on everything now. Like, this is a QAnon conspiracy. This QAnon thing is the greatest fucking thing that ever happened. It's everything that you don't like, you just go, oh, that's a QAnon conspiracy. White supremacists. Everything is race. Can it be that you're just a feckless fuck up? Can that be it? And you're fucking running the state into the ground? Could it be that? That, listen, Elon Musk, if I'm running the campaign against Gavin Newsom, I just go, who's the smartest man on the planet? Elon Musk. Where do you used to live? California. Where's he live now? Okay. Smartest guy on the planet left? That's all I need to know.
That's Newsom all. Is definitely on a full media blitz. He appeared on The View a couple of days ago. Oh, I'd like to play you a small little clip from Newsom's appearance there. It begins with Joy Behar asking him a question, and he does an expert piece of politicking to tell you once again who is behind this recall.
So President Biden has directed states to make all adults eligible for the vaccine by May 1st. But a new poll found nearly half of Trump supporters, 47%, won't take it. OK, California has a long established anti-vaccine movement. If vaccines are the key to getting back to normal, how will you convince anti-vaxxers to get the shot? Can you mandate it also?
No, I mean, it's the right question. And by the way, it's the anti-maskers and anti-vaxxers, not just the mega Trump donors and the Newt Gingriches and Mike Huckabees and Devin Nunes's, in addition to the conspiracy theorists and militia members that are behind this recall.
Yeah. What about people who want to send their fucking kids back to school? What militia are they in? What part of QAnon do they reside in? Mm-hmm. Fucking this God, he's a sociopathic prick. It's fucking horrible. Ugh. I've interviewed him. Blah.
So we're still a long way from this recall actually happening, but we can all keep our fingers crossed.
Well, now let's keep our fingers crossed.
On to some blackout news. A man is facing 20 years in prison for urinating on his plane seat.
Ah, I peed all over my shirt today.
At the urinal?
No, at the sink.
Somewhere.
Hey, it's my fucking sink. I'll do what I want with it. I was doing a radio interview, and I was doing a radio. You guys, before you judge, tell me what you would do.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I'm doing a radio interview this morning with Armstrong and Getty, who are plugging the Reno shows coming up. And I like to either do them in my car, or I'll just go out and kind of walk outside around the block where I know I have good reception and no one's going to come up and ask me questions and I got to point at my phone or whatever. So I was doing the interview out and about, sort of out in the open on the sidewalk. But I realized I had to take a leak pretty badly. And I thought, where do I take a leak? And I thought, well, it is my warehouse and it is my parking lot, but still, there's some foot traffic here. So I'll slide inside the warehouse. And I really had to pee badly at this point. So I thought, how am I going to keep this interview going and then take a big time piss in a toilet? Because they're going to hear this. The acoustics are bad in the bathroom. Right. So I decide I'll just lean over the sink and I'll take a silent whiz into the sink. Right. As I'm continuing my radio interview, which I dutifully did. But about halfway into the whiz, I noticed it didn't seem like anything was going into the sink. And I was wearing the gym shorts, and the shirt had pulled out, gone over the penis. And all I was doing is peeing into my own shirt, which was directing it back into my own shorts.
Oh, boy.
Although it was stealthy, I got to say, in terms of silence.
It was muted. It was definitely muted.
Yes. It was like peeing into a field of cotton. It was silent in the pee department. I was peeing all over myself, and then I couldn't really react to it. I was trying to adjust and continue with the interview. And
can I ask, what is your setup for the interview? Is it just...
I had the earbuds.
The earbuds. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had both hands free.
I did. Well, I think I was holding the phone, and you're right. I should have set the phone down. No good place to set a phone down in a bathroom. The top of the toilet's a little off camber. Sink's not quite right. There's a lot of slipping and sliding going on there. But
then you did the right move, just to urinate on your shirt.
I just peed on my own shirt, right. And then that's all right. I'll be home in 9 hours. Yeah. Change. Then you got the choice where you have to kind of shake hands with the devil, which is, do I now douse my shorts and shirt with water, thus creating a huge wet spot in my shorts and shirt for the continuation of the day, or do I let the lesser amount of whiz dry out?
Ride it out.
Yeah, I wrote it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Made the right decision.
Well, the FBI arrested 24-year-old Landon Greer after he wrote it out on March 9th. According to an affidavit, he was asked by a female flight attendant 8 to 10 times to put a face covering on, but he refused and then, quote, began to push and swat her hand away as she tried to gently tap his shoulder to get his attention. He subsequently stuck her arm 2 to 3 times in an attempt to aggressively dismiss her, and then later in the flight... Two flight attendants reported to a call button. The passenger reported to flight attendant A that passenger Greer was urinating in his seat. And saw him doing so, asked him to sit down.
The flight attendant noticed
that his penis was out of his pants.
I didn't think that was
the mistake I made. I didn't fully get my penis out of my pants. Yeah.
She told him to put his penis back into his pants. His response was, I have to pee. Several of the passengers around were reseated, and then the flight was brought to where it was going to go. The gentleman said that he told investigators that he had had several beers and a couple of shots before boarding the flight. He fell asleep on the plane and then awoke to being yelled at by the flight attendants, who told him he was peeing. He said he had no recollection of hitting the flight attendant and didn't know he was peeing.
Here's an interesting conundrum in the unintended consequences file. Now that they've cut back on the booze or got rid of booze altogether on flights, A lot of guys are nervous flyers. Other guys just enjoy a pop on a flight. I think maybe like tailgating where they don't serve alcohol in the stadium or something.
Right.
People tend to get their fill out in the parking lot. Like
they'll make up for it where they can.
Right. So I feel like a lot of guys that are used to ordering a couple of cocktails on a flight are now just cameling away the booze at the bar before they get on the flight, like trying to get the buzz to last them the 4.5 hours or whatever it is. And there may be some overcompensating boozing. Maybe no booze on the plane gets you less overall buzzed people, but more blackout
spikes,
drunk people.
Yeah, yes. Drunk people.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, would you admit that even in blackout drunk, he was able to get his penis out of his pants and successfully urinate without hitting a shirt?
I was stone cold sober. It was 10:30 in the morning, and I still could not negotiate getting my dick out of my shorts and into the sink. Dr. Drew always cracks me up because he had a roommate in college who woke up blackout drunk, got up, walked over, you got a picture of the old style record player with the flip lid on it, walked up to it, flipped it up like it was the toilet seat, and then just started pissing all over the stereo. That's perfect, right?
It's perfect.
One of my friends back in Santa Barbara in our big party heydays, I woke up to him about to take a piss in the oven.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he lifted the seat, worked the other way, though.
So. I was in Santa Barbara with some dudes, and one of them was drinking too much and got up and urinated all over the bed that a gal was sleeping in.
Hmm.
So I found it sort of erotic in its own way.
Well, in other penis news, a lawsuit filed in Harris County against NFL star Deshaun Watson alleges that the Houston Texans quarterback assaulted a massage therapist at her home by touching her with his penis. The alleged incident occurred last year at this time, March 30th, 2020. The lawsuit claims that Watson repeatedly told the massage therapist to focus on his, quote, groin area. And the woman began feeling incredibly uncomfortable after roughly 25 minutes. Due to Watson's comments and behavior, the massage therapist believed that he wanted a massage for only one reason, sex. Watson allegedly tried to direct the woman to his penis several times and purposely exposed the tip from under the towel he brought, according to the lawsuit, which also says Watson would reposition himself so that he could purposely touch the plaintiff's hand with the tip of his erect penis.
Well, if you've got a big honker and you're looking for groin work, and you're starting to become aroused, this is an inevitability, right?
Yeah, there's nowhere you can go.
How are we getting around this? It's going to be
literally.
It's going to be difficult to navigate, right?
Mm-hmm.
I bet he would have hit the sink.
I bet he walking through had a fucking problem. Minefield.
So he just started pushing his penis into her hand.
It's going to be hard to prove in a court of law because he's going to go, hey, I had a groin pull, so I wanted to focus on the groin, and, you know, I'm just as God made me, you know, I can't help that. My dad was well endowed, you know, and, the blood was circulating, and the Enya was pumping, and I shouldn't have lit the scented candle. But
I called an audible, and
that's
what I did.
That's right. Yeah. Check down.
Well, the woman who filed the suit did testify that directly after the incident, Deshaun Watson said to her, quote, I know you have a career and a reputation, and I know you would hate for someone to mess with yours, just like I don't want anyone messing with mine. This woman took that as a threat. And
possible admission of guilt there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, but let's not judge.
Let's move on to a piece of music news. Wolf Van Halen has called out the Grammys for their paltry tribute to Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, yeah.
Personally, I did not see it, but it was about 15 seconds of the recorded rendition of the Eddie Van Halen guitar solo Eruption. While a tastefully laid Eddie Van Halen guitar was on the stage.
However, was his beef?
His beef was, and I'll read you the quote, the Grammys asked me to play Eruption for the In Memoriam section, and I declined. I don't think anyone could have lived up to what my father did for music but himself. It was my understanding there would be an in memoriam section where bits of songs were performed for legendary artists that had passed. I didn't realize they would only show Pop, his dad, for 15 seconds in the middle of four full performances of the others we had lost. What hurt the most was that he wasn't even mentioned when they talked about artists we lost in the beginning of the show. He was sadly omitted from that. I know rock isn't the most popular genre right now, and the Academy does seem a bit out of touch, but I think it's impossible to ignore the legacy my father left on the instrument, the world of rock, and music in general. There will never be another innovator like him.
I feel that way about my dad and his trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're just going to put a flugelhorn out there. Then we're just going to back an air compressor up into the mouthpiece and let it fly. All right. Why didn't they have his name in the in memoriam thing? Seems
I think it was the no name at the top of the show of Dawson.
If yes, it was at the top of the show where they mentioned Kenny Rogers.
Oh, I see.
The other people.
The big question, I guess, is who were the people who he had beef with who got longer? First of all, were they full performances or were they like 30 seconds or a minute?
Well, unfortunately, I scrubbed the internet to try to find this. I can't find any piece of the Grammys on the internet that is the actual broadcast, so I can't see anymore, and I did not watch it. But he alludes to four full performances, and this article here says that those performers were...
I'll buy some time.
That's 16 to 20 minutes of performance.
Little Richard, Kenny Rogers, John Prine, and Jerry Mardson.
I don't know who Jerry Mardson is, but they could have done it. But I bet they weren't full performances. It's probably like a medley thing. But can he play Eruption? Because you better nail Eruption. No. If you can't nail Eruption, it's going to sound like a shit show, right?
But I understand what he's saying. He didn't want to. He doesn't think that anyone could represent what his father could have done on stage. And it is true that Eddie Van Halen did more for budding guitar players in rock and roll, possibly than anyone else. I mean, even more than Hendrix, Jimmy Page. Eddie Van Halen, especially through the dawn of MTV.
Yeah, of his era, for sure.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of guitar players would say that their reason for playing the guitar was Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah, he was kind of like what Top Gun was for naval flyer recruitment. He was for guitar players. Yeah, MTV probably opened up. Yeah, like Jimi Hendrix was so good and so crazy, he didn't inspire anyone. Everyone just watched him and went, oh, shit, I can't do that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have an interesting twist on Germany or Florida. A woman
By the way,
said,
"I'm from Florida. I'm from Florida."
Oh, it's an advantage.
Oh,
yeah, I'm having an advantage.
A ringer.
You'll be happy to know that a woman says she found true love and has had children with a roller coaster. That roller coaster is either in Germany or Florida.
I'm going to go Germany. This feels like Germany to me.
Brian.
Yeah, the weird outside the line sexual stuff. I always go German.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go German as well, although I hope to God it's Florida in the Tampa area.
Well, yes. Gail Engel claims that she has long been sexually attracted to inanimate objects, but she says she didn't know true passion until she fell for a German roller coaster. She says you could say that I'm sexually drawn to roller coasters. But since I met the Sky Scream roller coaster, I understood what love was. A French woman says about her attraction to...
Even German.
Nope. But she fell in love with the German. She spends every moment dreaming of a carnal and fusional relationship with it. She's 43 years old, said she has been sexually attracted to objects since she was age 12. She's had three serious romantic human relationships, but has found them all to be traumatic. So
it's not like a toaster.
Yeah. So yeah. What she does is she says dating a roller coaster does have its drawbacks.
Really?
The couple are unable to have any sexual physical relationship and meeting up is difficult. But she says, but life made me understand that sex was not a priority in my relationship, especially following the difficulties and trials we encountered in being able to not see each other.
Yeah.
Meeting up should be easy. You always know where it is. It's never going to be anywhere else. Alone time might be a problem.
I thought so, too.
You know, maybe Wayne Fetterman could get this show off the ground called What Happened Here? Which is, you know, I go to the Home Depot. I interview the 81-year-olds who are walking the plumbing aisle who are working there for $11 an hour. And I just go, what happened here? What went wrong? What happened? And then we interview, like, her parents. You know, 27-year-old daughter's banging a roller coaster. What happened here? This is what, I got kids. I want to steer clear of this. Well, what you guys do? What didn't you do? I'm all ears.
Is that right? Is there some kind of tip you can give me where you think you went wrong?
Yeah, just let me know so I don't go down that path.
Too much nurturing, was it?
Right.
Did you cuddle too much? Did you?
Yeah, too much praise, not enough praise. Exactly. Is this a super high self-esteem move? I could argue it was, but I could also make an argument for super low self-esteem as well. All right, let's do one more, Dawson. You're doing a yeoman's job, by the way.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we touched on this earlier, but over the weekend, Marvelous Marvin Hagler passed away. His sudden death over the weekend, though, had nothing to do with the COVID-19 vaccine. That's what his wife is saying. Kay Hagler slapped down speculation that Marvelous Marvin, 66, died after receiving the vaccine. She says, I do not accept that some stupid comment without knowing what really happened. She wrote in a post, for sure it wasn't the vaccine that caused his death. My baby left in peace with his usual smile must be. And now is the time. Now is not the time to talk nonsense. Well, following the news of his death, here's what happened. His one-time rival turned pal Thomas Hearns fueled rumors of what caused the boxer's death.
Did you guys see this tweet
on Instagram?
No. He said, "Are we listening to fucking the boxer? Hasn't seen him in two decades."
Well, he said it was his pal. I don't know.
It says, "A real, true warrior. Pray for the king and his family. He's in ICU fighting the after effects of the vaccine. He'll be just fine. But we could use the positive energy, and pray for his full recovery." He wrote in a since-deleted post. He followed that up with this one, saying, allow us to have our peace, our love and respect to Marvin and his family. This is not an anti-vaccine campaign. It's outrageous to have that in mind during the passing of a king, legend, father, husband, and so much more. That post was also deleted. And it's interesting that he was saying, it's outrageous to have this during the time of the passing of a king, when he's the one who put it out there in the first place. But Hagler's own website said he died of natural causes near his home in New Hampshire, but does not elaborate.
It's weird. That's Thomas the Hitman Fauci. World's greatest boxing epidemiologist.
That's right.
So Hitman Hearns, before he's dead, saying he's in the hospital, he had a reaction to the vaccine. Which is like, I don't know where he got this information, but maybe they know each other. They've stayed in touch, or they're friends, or whatever it is. I don't know why he's saying that, but it's peculiar. And then he dies very shortly thereafter, and then Hearns walks it back, I guess. Now, it seems crazy, but it's also weird, right? I mean, why did he think he was reacting to the vaccine before he died?
Right.
And what got him into the ICU? And then we're not really hearing anything from the family about why he died.
Right. He must have had some kind of information or misinformation to make that claim in the first place.
Occam's razor would say he maybe got the vaccine given his age, and then he coincidentally got sick given his age and died. I mean, that's totally
reasonable. Could happen. But then where does Hearns work in it? Hearns is just like doing a math where he's like, he got the vaccine, then he went to the hospital, so he must have had a reaction to the vaccine.
That's possible. That was my thought.
Yeah.
The timeline of events is he got his shot, he got sick, and he got in the hospital. Maybe he just put, you know, two and two and two together.
Yeah. Interesting. Or just 2
or
and 2.
Or maybe he got sick from the vaccine. Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, there's probably a very small percentage of people that would. I mean, everyone's freaked out. But take the fucking vaccine. But, yeah, maybe, you know, 1 point, you know, percent of 1/100th may die of it. That could happen. It still doesn't mean you shouldn't get it. But it's curious what the hell Hearns knew. Mm. All right, let's bring it home, Dawson.
Mike Dawson, news is over.
Sweet, man. Yeah, me and Reno tomorrow, I guess, as you hear this, doing the brew house over there, doing stand-up, Virginia
Street Brew House. Is it full capacity?
It's something, some version of something.
Okay.
Jam in the Van Speakeasy, we told you about that, it's coming up on the 25th, doing two shows there. Nashville Zanies, I'm sure that'll be, we're doing a live pod there, that's April 14th, that'll be full. And then just go to amcurl.com for all the live shows. Wayne Fetterman, everyone, the history of stand-up, go there and learn something, read that book. From Mark Twain to Dave Chappelle, it's available now on Amazon. And shoot him a tweet at Fetterman, just like it sounds. So, until next time, great job, Dawson. Until next time, I'm Kroll for Mike Dawson and Wayne Fetterman and Bald Ryan saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and pick up any of Adam's books or all of them at adamcarolla.com.